And welcome back to the Roundtable. I'm Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue. It's one of our favorite times of the week. It's time for book picks. Emily Crow is here from Odyssey Bookshop in South Hadley, Massachusetts, with a great and very varied list of reading suggestions. Good morning, Emily. How are you doing?
Morning, Ray. Thanks for having me here today.
Nice to have you here. Now, of course, summer winding down, but some of this list could be considered good summer reading, don't you think?
Absolutely. It's not too late to still get in a great summer read. And if you don't have any vacation time left, you can think about it for the fall, because some of these are really excellent titles.
Or, you know, you could do what Joe Donahue does and read at work, because it's part of his job.
Oh, if only we all could do that.
It's nice. Where would you like to begin this morning?
I am going to start with a book called The Dog Stars by Peter Heller.
Okay.
And this is probably the best book I've read this year. And I might even go so far as to say it's the best book I'll read in any year.
Why? That's a pretty large
list. It's a big
statement. Yeah.
And I read a lot. And this is a book that really latched onto me in a way that I wasn't expecting. It's a debut novel, but Peter Heller doesn't write like he's new to fiction. He has a deep background in adventure writing and huntsman writing. And he has a background in travel as well, and it's clear that once you settle into Dog Stars that it's the prose that really sets this book apart.
Okay.
It's experimental, it's truncated, but also with a stream of consciousness aspect to it that really lets you get right into the mind of the first-person narrator. It's the story of Hig, and he's one of the very few surviving people after a terrible flu and then a terrible blood disease have wiped out almost the entire population.
Okay.
He lives in a state of, I guess you would call, an uneasy alliance with a neighbor who is a military-hardened, gun-toting, tough guy named Bangley. And they live together at a small, abandoned municipal airport. And together with Higgs, Cessna and a dog named Jasper, they create a perimeter that they can defend fairly easily and protect against the marauding people because the remaining survivors have become almost feral in their quest to find food and kill other people and that sort of thing.
Right.
Your basic post-apocalyptic scene.
Sounds like a movie.
Right. So it's an uneasy alliance, but it's a really successful one because they learn to rely on each other's strengths. Until one day, Hig is up in the air flying his plane, and he hears this voice on the Cessna's radio broadcasting from a place beyond the point of no return from his gas tank. So he knows he cannot pursue it. But it's a voice that really starts to haunt his waking and dreaming moments, because it makes him ask, are there other pockets of people out there like them? People who've maintained their humanity, but also people who've maintained their hope. And I don't want to say more about the plot beyond that, other than the rest of the book is dedicated to that search, and also dedicated to the preservation of that hope. And this book is one of the most singularly satisfying reading experiences I've had. And it drew me deeply in, and I still think about the characters, even though I read these months ago. And my husband tells me that all it took was watching me read the book to make him want to read it. Because I was laughing, I was crying, I was gripping the book with white knuckles, I was putting it down when it was too intense, and it was just my entertaining him by watching me that made him pick up the book and love it too.
So is it the quest for humanity that speaks to you in this?
Oh gosh, it's almost everything. I mean, it's the dog, it's the quest for hope, it is survival, it's maintaining your own humanity in the face of impossible odds.
All right, I'm going to do something I rarely do. I'm going to actually circle this one.
All right.
And perhaps I will have time in the next decade to read it. All right, what else we got?
All right, I am going to move on to a book called The Unlikely Pilgrimage of Harold Fry.
All right.
It is written by a woman named Rachel Joyce. She's a British writer. She has written for the stage and for radio, but this is her first novel.
Okay.
So over breakfast one day, this very quiet retired fellow named Harold Fry receives a letter. And in it, he learns that an old friend and colleague is dying of cancer.
Mm.
And there is nothing, there's no hope, there's nothing more they can do. She's just in hospice. And he knows that he has to write a response, because you get a letter like that, you can't just ignore it.
Yes.
But he has no idea what to say to her. So he jots off something and walks out to the letterbox to mail it. But the thing is, as he's walking out and he reaches the letterbox, he realizes that he should think of something better to write. So he's just going to walk on to the next letterbox until he thinks of what that's going to be.
Yeah.
And he does that again and again, going from one letterbox to another until he realizes he's already walked himself out of town. So he stops by a gas station to check in with his wife, who just thought he was going to mail a letter. And while he's at the gas station, he has this chance encounter with a girl who somehow convinces him that really the best way to respond to Queenie is to walk all the way there and give her the letter in person. Never mind that it's over 500 miles away. Harold is not in any shape to be walking. He doesn't have a cell phone. He doesn't even have a wallet on him. And, of course, he doesn't even stop to consider that his wife might have something to say about that, too.
Yes, and the relationship between Harold and his wife, a prickly one, yes?
Yes, you could say that. By the time that Harold has reached retirement age, they have nothing to talk about, nothing to say to each other, and no warmth left for the other. But it's along his journey that Harold begins to find support in the unlikeliest of people, and he discovers a strength in himself that, of course, he never knew he had. And before long, his pilgrimage starts to draw national attention. He's getting news coverage, media coverage. And as he learns that he basically just needs to put one foot in front of the other, no matter what the terrain or what the state of his poor blistered feet might be, he has plenty of time to meditate on life and his marriage and his friendship with this woman who is dying and his relationship with his son and how he's mostly just made a mess of things in his life. It's a book that has a lot of funny things on the surface, and it might be easy to dismiss it as just a fun, quirky book.
Yeah.
But it has real emotional depth, too. And I definitely laughed out loud while reading it. But more than once, I was also moved to tears because the author, Rachel Joyce, really taps into this sea of humanity that I think we all want to tap into. Most of the reviews I've read of this book compare it to Major Pettigrew's Last Stand, which was a very good and very popular novel. But I think the more appropriate comparison is either the Guernsey Literary and Potato Peel Pie Society, or possibly The Tower, the Zoo, and the Tortoise. And those are both novels with an ensemble cast of quirky characters. But that peculiarity and that whimsy is also matched by the poignancy that the stories ultimately deliver.
How does it turn out? You're going to tell me?
I can't say.
All right.
Not on the air.
All right.
But I also really love that it's a book whose main characters are all of retirement age or older. Because that's a demographic that is not featured very much in good literary fiction. And if you love heartfelt stories with real characters and British humor, I think you would be doing yourself a favor by checking this one out.
Okay, that's The Unlikely Pilgrimage of Harold Fry.
Yes.
Rachel Joyce. Okay, what's next?
Next, I am going to talk about a book called Me, Who Dove into the Heart of the World. And it is written by a woman named Sabina Berman. Now, I had never heard of this writer before, but she is an important poet and playwright in Mexico. This is not only her first novel, but it's her first work that has ever been translated into English. And it's the story of a girl named Karen Nieto, and Karen is an autistic child who runs completely feral. She's wilder than the dogs and the cats of the neighborhood, and she is wild and untamed and mostly fending her for herself until she's about the age of 7 or 8.
Okay.
And it's unclear, of course, because she's wild and no one can ask her how old she is when she is found and taken in. But she's completely mute, and thus she can't even give voice to the really unspeakable things that have happened to her in her life. And we come to find out later that she was abused at the hands of her mother because she is different.
Mm.
But then her aunt moves back to Mexico and discovers this niece that she didn't know she had, and she teaches Karen how to speak as well as to act like a human, in as much as Karen can act like a human. Karen learns to sort of speak and navigate the bewildering world of humans, and since her family's industry is a canning company, Consuela Tuna, Karen really develops an affinity for thinking like fish. Like fish. She is trying to envision how the fish are seeing things, how they're being caught, how they're being transported. And by putting herself in their position, she's able to sort of transform her family's tuna canning industry into something that's very humane, as much as killing an animal can be humane. because Karen is an autistic savant, and then for the first time in her life, she has a person in her life who really encourages her to think about what she can do rather than to feel that she's limited by what she can't do. Mm. If it sounds familiar by reading Temple Grandin, then you're right. There are some definite parallels between Temple Grandin's work with animals and the story here with Karen and her work with fish. And if you've read a book called The Curious Incident of the Dog in the Night, then you'll have an idea of what it's like to read a book with Karen's very distinctive narrative voice. But I think the really good thing about this book, the main underlying point, is Karen's success on her terms in a world that befuddles or irritates and scares her, mostly in equal amounts. And it's also a great triumph of translation because Karen's first-person voice is always clear and consistent. And I say, you know, congratulations to Lisa Dillman, who is the translator for this work.
Yeah, you know, I was wondering that as you were describing this, how different it would actually be if you read it in Spanish.
I only wish I could.
Hmm. Well, maybe for the next show.
For the next show. I'll get right on that.
All right. What's All right. next, Emily?
Okay. The next one is on the other side of the world from Mexico, and it's a book set just off the coast of Australia. It is called The Light Between Oceans, mm-hmm. and it is written by a woman named M.L. Stedman. And I've been so excited about this book since January, which is when I first read it, and I've been dying for it to be published so I can talk about it to people. It just debuted a couple of weeks ago, and it is a book filled with just one moral dilemma after another.
Mm.
The book opens up right after World War I in Australia, and Tom is a returning soldier, and he's just barely self-aware enough to know that he really needs to put some time and some space between himself and the rest of the world as he knows it, coming back from war and the things that he's seen and had to do. So he applies for a job as a lighthouse keeper for the Commonwealth, and he keeps applying for one more remote post after another until finally he gets one that is 100 miles off the southwestern coast of Australia, and it's where the Indian and the Pacific Oceans meet. I'm sorry, the Indian and the Southern Oceans meet. And it's hardship duty because he's only allowed 1 month vacation after 3 years of isolation contract. So when he is on shore leave and he meets a young woman named Isabel and falls in love with her, he knows it's not fair to ask her to join him, but she won't be deterred. They get married, and their love for each other is almost enough to sustain them, but then she goes through multiple miscarriages and is on the brink of just falling into a depression and insanity. And then she almost carries a child to term, but it's stillborn. When she's burying the child on this rocky coastline, a boat washes up. And in the boat is a man who has just recently died, but miraculously a small baby protected in his arms is still alive. She convinces her husband not to report this in his log for his job and to just claim the baby as their own, because it's almost impossible to believe that the baby would have any living relatives 100 miles from nowhere washed up like that. And so Tom does agree to do that, but it changes him forever because he's a man of honor and he knows that that's not right. But it's also the only thing that would make his wife happy.
Yeah.
And so he does it. And it's one of those books where you realize as soon as one bad decision is made, it's just going to keep on happening. You know the book is not going to end well.
Well, why? Okay. All right. My philosophical question for you is, why would you want to read a book you know is not going to end well?
Because you want to be along on the ride. It's a completely compelling story. You want to be caught up in that narrative. And I don't know about you, but I love books that make me ask what I would do. And I swear, after that first bad decision is made, I have no idea what I would have done in any of those situations.
So it is a good tangled book.
It is, absolutely. It's ethical questions, moral dilemmas, and asking, you know, how do you really decide what's best for a child?
Okay, so this is The Light Between Oceans by M.L. Stedman.
Yes.
I think we have time for one or two more here. We got a couple of minutes.
Okay, I will try to quickly talk about Liar and Spy by Rebecca Stead. It is she's the author of the book called When You Reach Me, which won the Newbery Award a few years ago. And this book was so wonderful, I just wanted to hug it while I was reading it. It's a middle grade novel, probably most appropriate for 5th grade to 8th grade readers.
All right.
And it deals with bullying, downsizing, the metaphorical loss of a parent, and even agoraphobia. But on the upside, it's got a spy club and daring adventures and lots of underdogs that you can root for.
Well, all right. That's perfect.
It's the story of Georges, who is about to start 7th grade, and his father loses his job. So they have to move out of their great big house, where he has the super cool, awesome bedroom with a real New York fire escape nailed to the wall. Mm. His father's an architect and was able to make that happen. And so they move to a tiny apartment, and on top of everything, his mother now has to work every double shift at the hospital to try to make ends meet. And so he never gets to see her, and he's about to start 7th grade, and he knows it is not going to be any better than 6th grade was. But then he sees a sign in the basement for a spy club, and he shows up for the first meeting. And he meets a boy named Safer, who is brilliant but very peculiar and obsessed with spying and secret information. And before long, they get in over their head spying on Mr. X, who is a mysterious and quite possibly evil neighbor. And then they get in over their heads. Ooh. And they have to face the consequences.
Love it.
So it's a really a wonderful novel about friendship and forgiveness and finding your own way. And I think plenty of adults will like this one, too.
It sounds like I would like this as well. I think we're going to run out of time before we talk about this Nocturne Dream Recipes. I don't think 20 seconds will do it justice.
It won't do it justice.
But it was so fun to have you here. The Odyssey Bookshop is in South Hadley, Massachusetts. The website, odysseybks.com. Well, this was enjoyable. Emily, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me today, Ray.
Emily Crow from Odyssey Bookshop. You are listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.